Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, why did so many evangelical Christians vote for Donald Trump when the man doesn't seem to have the character of a Christian or any significant awareness of the Bible's teaching? Well, my friend, many pastors have actually been gathering around Donald Trump in this past year, and they report that he is paying at least serious attention to them. However, in the past, he has certainly made statements which suggest a complete unfamiliarity with the Bible. And whenever connection with God awaits his future, let's assume for the moment, we don't know, you don't know, I don't know, but for the sake of this discussion, let's assume for the moment that our new President Trump is not a born-again Christian. I don't think he is, but that does not concern me, because God can and does use people for his purposes, regardless of their heartfelt beliefs. For example, during the Jewish captivity in ancient Babylon, King Artaxerxes decided to release his Jewish slaves and allow them to return to their homeland. That was unprecedented in history, an obvious intervention of God. King Artaxerxes did not know the God of the Hebrews, the God of the universe, the same God whose prophets told the Jews that they would only remain in Babylon for 70 years. If Donald Trump fights for the rights of religious freedom, recognized by our Constitution, but not particularly recognized by our former president, so be it. Mitt Romney, as you know, is a Mormon. He lost the election in 2012, but I did vote for him over Obama. Now, Mormons, although great allies politically and morally, no disrespect intended to Mormons at all, Mormons, let's be honest, they believe some weird stuff. Not the least of which is that God the Father was once a human being, and that any human being who converts to Mormonism will someday become a god himself with his own planet to rule. Now, I would not ever vote for Mitt Romney to become the pastor of my church. But when asked by fellow conservatives why I was willing to vote for him for president of the United States over Barack Obama, I said it's simple. Who would you rather have? Somebody who thinks he's going to become a god someday, or somebody who already believes he's God now? Anyway, 2012 seems long ago. It is now 2017. The election is over. The inauguration is over. Some people are having a hard time getting that through their thick skulls. Face it, my liberal Democrat friends, it's over. There's a new sheriff in town, as the saying goes, but I'm going to add to the saying, because more correctly put, there's a sheriff in town, period. You know, sheriffs, it's been a long time since we've had one. Sheriffs, people who actually enforce the law instead of making up the law themselves, instead of saying poetic but destructive things such as, I believe the Constitution is a living, breathing document. Doesn't that sound beautiful? That's code for let's get judges to reinterpret the Constitution to make it say whatever we want and thus rule from the bench, ignoring the will of our so-called democracy and spreading a progressive socialist Marxist agenda with autocratic rule. By the way, speaking of democracy, blocking traffic or attempting to shut down an event is not democracy at work, like some of our so-called news outlets would have you believe. Instead, that is the suppression of free speech and the suppression of freedom, period. Riots on the streets are not democracy at work. Vandalism is not democracy at work either. breaking windows or setting cars on fire is not democracy at work. Shooting people, that is not democracy. That is anarchy. Now, I know each word ends with a Y, but they are actually two different words, and people should learn the difference. Neither is it democracy at work when a sitting U.S. congressman says he will not accept the re-election results. Folks, elections are democracy. If you can't accept an election, you don't believe in democracy. That's not democracy at work. Are we certifiably insane? But then he wasn't alone. He was joined by many others in Congress, many others in the elitist press, many others from Hillary's campaign. And of course, last but not least, dear sweet Hollywood, you gather up all these various people groups, take their joint collective wisdom, boil it into one big crock pot, and we get quite a rewriting of what happened in November. Of course, the narrative has remained fluid as they would want you to believe our Constitution is. Yes, sir, the chronology these past 3 months went something like this. Where we were first treated to a sanctimonious lecture from Hillary the night of the last debate, after the moderator Chris Wallace asked Trump if he would concede the election should Hillary win. Of course, the question was asked because practically everyone in the media and the political pool, including Hillary, were sure, absolutely positive, that she was going to win, despite the WikiLeaks, which showed how crooked and corrupt she was, how crooked and corrupt her campaign was, how crooked and corrupt the Democratic Party itself was. We heard nothing to see here, Johnny. Oh, that's not news. The American people don't care. The American people want us to move in. All they care about, all the American people want to hear about, are the issues, just the issues. They don't care about these stupid WikiLeaks. Makes no difference. Oh, and so that's what they said. So confident that Hillary would win, it was, of course, incumbent upon Trump to prepare for his loss and be a good sport. But when Trump gave a noncommittal answer about conceding only if the election wasn't rigged, Hillary was shocked, or at least she acted shocked. She expressed grave concern at the debate. She said, and I quote, "That's horrifying." She went on to say, "That's not the way our democracy works. We've been around 240 years. We've had free and fair elections, and we've accepted the outcomes when we may not have liked them, and that is what must be expected of anyone standing on a debate stage during a general election." Well, you remember what happened next. She, not Trump, she was called upon to concede the election. She didn't do it the first night. It took a call from President Obama, but she finally conceded, at least officially. Unofficially, her surrogates kept it open. First, we heard that tired drivel about how she won the popular vote, even though she lost the Electoral College. Now, I explained on this program that we were not taking a popular vote, and if we had been, nobody knows what the results would have been. I won't belabor the point. But that was the first talking point from the left. Hillary won the popular vote. At that time, journalists, Democratic pundits, college professors, and actors offered lectures on how the Electoral College should be retired. It's a dinosaur. But meanwhile, just in case we wanted to still take the Electoral College seriously, a recount was ordered for those few blue states where Trump unexpectedly won, but only by small margins. Should we find that something was awry, well, then perhaps we would see that Hillary won the electoral vote, too. And in that case, then, of course, there would be nothing wrong with the Electoral College. But when they recounted, Trump still won. In fact, he won by a larger number. Well, that one didn't work. Back to the drawing board. Next, we heard new lectures from Hollywood, since technically the members of the Electoral College could ignore the fact that even if there was no national popular vote, there was in fact a popular vote in each individual state. Now, suddenly, as if the idea had never caught on before, Hollywood reminds us that our wise forefathers put the Electoral College into our system as a kind of fail-safe so that our country is never ruled by a mob. They tell the members of the Electoral College that they have a chance to save our democratic republic. How? By ignoring the democracy part of our democratic republic. Well, it doesn't work. The Electoral College votes in December and Trump still wins. So what's next? Well, don't forget, Hillary won the popular vote. Let's just pull that one out of the basement again. Yeah, upon reflection, We were right the first time. Let's retire the Electoral College. Oh, yeah. And by the way, the Russians hacked the election results, right? Well, okay, election machines are not hooked up to the internet. But the WikiLeaks thing probably came from the Russians. And what was contained about Hillary influenced people. I mean, sure, the content of those emails was all true, but the public would have been better off not knowing the truth. It merely gave us bad information about a candidate. Kind of like that video about Trump making lewd comments about women may have also influenced some voters, and that was leaked. But let's not go there. That was completely different. Because this time with WikiLeaks, it's the Russians! The Russians! What? What? You say that before we were claiming that the American people didn't care what was in those WikiLeaks? Well, apparently they did care. So the election was rigged. Folks, folks, give it up. Hillary is not going to be president. That is just the way it is going to be. And Obama stepped down, even though he's staying in Washington, resuming his role as a community organizer. He said that. He's promising not to go away, but at least he's not in the White House anymore. Time to say goodbye. And today on the Bob Siegel Show, because it is bringing a tear to my eye that Obama is departing, we do want to offer a special farewell to the man who did such a crackerjack job as president these past 8 years. Now, as you know, they refer to females or countries in the female form. They refer to countries as females, females as countries. America is often called she. So we will honor that tradition. Let's celebrate by listening to Female America say goodbye to Barack Obama.
Goodbye, 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 goodbye.
Don't try to stop me, Horace, please.
Wave your little hand and whisper so long, dearie, you ain't gonna see me anymore. And when you discover that your life is dreary, don't you come a knocking at my door. Whisper so long, dearie, dearie, should have said so long ago. Because you treated me so rotten and rough, I have had enough of feeling low. So wave your little hand and whisper so long, dearie, dearie, should have said so long ago. For I can hear that choo-choo calling me on to a fancy new address. Yes, I can hear that choo-choo calling me on board that happiness express. I'm gonna learn to dance and drink and smoke a cigarette. I'm gone as far away from Yonkers as a girl can get. So
call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
So, more beautiful.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Whoa. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. We don't do politics every week, but naturally, the weekend after the inauguration, it's a rather big elephant in the room, and not just because the elephant is a Republican mascot. Joining me today, contributing writer for National Review, rotating co-host and good friend, and one who on this very radio show called the election for Trump a couple of weeks before when most of the polls and conventional wisdom said otherwise, Mike Friedenberg. Mike, welcome back to our program.
Bob, a pleasure to be on with you once again.
Well, good. So you must be feeling good that the inauguration finally took place with all the talk about the Russians and all these attempts and electoral college stuff. I stand by my theory that Obama was at least considering some scenarios with which to stay around. I think it's going to come out someday that he was at least thinking about it. But he didn't do it. He stepped down. He's not going away, but at least he's not president anymore.
Yes, I say thank heavens to that. The pettiness that happened between Election Day and the inauguration was truly amazing.
Well, and it's still going on. There have been horrible riots all over the country.
No, and
people being pulled out of their cars. Somebody even got shot. I mean, it's been
horrible. And that obviously that goes beyond pettiness, but just the pettiness, the lack of class. Basically, it seems like it was a concerted effort that if you happen to vote for Trump, we're going to make sure that you don't enjoy any period of time without something negative happening or coming out on him. I mean, the amount of fake news being shot out by the press is truly incredible. And some of the most blatant, I believe, fake news was this whole intelligence community, you know, uniformly behind the idea that Vladimir Putin purposely intended to throw the election to Trump.
Look, I don't like the Russians, and quite honestly, I don't like how much Trump seems to like them, but the idea that they would have preferred to have Trump as president, somebody who would obviously stand up to them, other than Hillary, who along with Obama just kissed their behinds it's a joke. And if they tried to hack into our election results, it didn't work because our machines, again, were not hooked up to the internet. The WikiLeaks, if they had something to do with it, I don't know that they did, but if they did, what came out was the truth. The Democrats did not deny it. They did not deny it. All they said was that the American people didn't care about it.
Your point was well taken, that we had a off-camera moment where Donald Trump thought he was off camera that certainly devastated him. The comments about the very vulgar comments about women, very, very devastating. And rightfully so, he didn't deny that that it was made up, that somebody had doctored the tape. He had to apologize. It did hurt him, and in fact,
and that affected a lot of votes.
And listen, I'm convinced to this day it affected potentially millions.
And
of
I
votes.
Forget which news organization had it. I think it was either ABC or CNN, but they had it for months.
No, they held it,
and they released it at a certain time. So who was trying to interfere with the election?
Absolutely.
And so they both there was a lot of bad things on both candidates. Everybody knew they were both flawed. Somebody won. Suck it up, everybody.
Exactly.
Accept it.
Exactly. So. And that's a very good point to bring that back up. Now, going back to the whole business with when you heard them talking about the intelligence agencies, you know, uniformly, 17 intelligence agencies uniformly coming out and saying absolutely positively, this is the way it is. And if anybody questioned it, what the response you heard was, well, you know, that is disrespectful. These people put their lives on the line. They're out there. People have died in the line of duty. And Donald Trump, you're questioning these people whose blood and sacrifice keeps our nation safe. Well, that was completely and utterly bogus. What they were talking about was the political hacks that have been hired as political heads of the agencies.
And when I watched the behavior of Comey with the FBI, there's nothing about the way that man behaved that told me that somehow the Obama administration wasn't pulling his strings. I'm more interested not in what the heads of the CIA, FBI, et cetera, were saying. What were the rank and file members saying? And when Trump spoke before the CIA rank and file members, they practically got up and gave him a standing ovation.
Well, they actually did give him a standing ovation.
Did they really?
Yes,
okay, I didn't see that part, but I saw them the part where they were applauding him every word out of his mouth.
Wasn't moderate enthusiasm. It wasn't polite clapping. It was wild enthusiasm.
But and the police are enthusiastic, and the military, not the generals that are hacks under Obama.
Right. So think about it. You are somebody who's in the intelligence community. You're a member of the FBI, counterintelligence, anybody of that nature, and you've sat here for 8 years with information that you had to let people go that you knew could potentially harm and kill citizens. You are somebody within the FBI that knew that this terrorist that you saw was somebody that you could have pulled off the street and done something with. But because political correctness held reign, they were not able to do their job. So I believe that within the intelligence community, just as 80% of law enforcement voted for Donald Trump, that I believe the vast majority of the rank and file, the people that really do put their lives on the line for America, voted for Donald Trump because they're sick of political correctness and social engineering coming before actually protecting U.S. citizens from being attacked and hurt.
I agree. And it's when I listened to some of the commentators that were talking right after Trump's speech, I thought he gave an excellent speech. And again, folks, if you've been following this show, I have not been a huge Donald Trump fan, but so far he's been doing what he promised to do. So far he's done more good in the 2 months he was president-elect than Obama has done for our country in the last 8 years. Not that Obama wasn't busy at work. He was very busy. And when he says we're going to make America great again, that's somehow to be taken as a great big threat. On MSNBC, it sounded Hitlerian to them. On another network, I believe it was ABC, it reminded them of the kinds of things that Hitler did to the Jews when he talked about how great we're going to make our country. Dangerous patriotism. And this thing, have you followed this thing about the bust of Winston Churchill and the bust of
Martin Luther King?
I mean, it makes your head spin. It was the biggest insult in the world that after all these years of having a bust of Winston Churchill in the Oval Office, Obama removed it. Nothing wrong with having Martin Luther King's bust in there, too, but he replaced it. So Trump brings back Winston Churchill and apparently puts Martin Luther King somewhere else in the same room. And they mentioned that he removed it as if that would have been erased. And frankly, if he wanted to remove it, he could remove it. He could put any bust he wants in there, but he didn't remove it. They lied through their teeth. They get called out. And then when he calls them out, we're hearing even the Republican operatives go, maybe he should tone it down. Maybe, you know, we've been hearing Republicans tone it down for years and years and years. Where has it gotten us?
For decades, we've been hearing it.
We finally have somebody who fights. And you know what, Mike? I've said vocally on this show in the past that I wanted Trump to get off Twitter. I need to amend that. And as much as when he was running against Republicans and tweeting against them, I didn't like it. But bypassing the media through Twitter, I do like that. I don't always like the content of the tweets. I'd like him to think about him before he makes them instead of giving knee-jerk reactions. But the fact that he's making an end run about the media, around the media, go for it. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
The internet site About Read was founded on the premise that a good book can change a person's life. This valuable resource offers guidance to those who wish to visit their local libraries. And now, About Read lists Bob Siegel's children's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, under the category of Top 30 Best Action and Adventure Books for 11-year-olds.
Did you say 11-year-olds? But the kid in my book is 12 years old.
Bob, it's an honor just to be on the list. Be grateful.
All right, all right.
The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Welcome back to 1170 KCBQ, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I haven't forgotten that last week I did begin a series on having a quality prayer time with God. I will continue that series next week. It will be our only topic next week. I want to give it the attention it deserves, but we did run into some timing, obviously, since political commentary is also one of our themes. And since my show is only on once a week, we could not ignore this historical weekend, the inauguration of a man who, whatever you may say about him, has never before held a political office. And yet he was sworn in as president of the United States. Co-hosting today is Mike Friedenberg with National Review.
Yes, Bob, just going back to what we were talking about before the break, Zeke Miller was the journalist, or whatever you want to call him.
The one who said the thing about the Martin Luther King bust.
And basically, it was as simple as somebody was standing in front of the bust.
So couldn't he have just asked somebody, where's the bust, instead of immediately, good, I don't see it.
Exactly.
He didn't want to see it.
He did not want to see it. He sent out the tweet. There's a number of reasons the bust could not have been there. It could have been maybe it got a little dirty or needed a minor restoration or they were doing a preserving. A number of things, but a responsible journalist does not send out a tweet like that. But he sent it out because it was another gotcha, to confirm what he actually already believes in his heart about Donald Trump. Now, we had in the 1930s, we had a movement called the America First Movement.
Right.
And there was a huge chunk of anti-Semitism in
that
movement.
Exactly. But see, it's not one size fits all with language, folks. Sometimes we use similar words and we mean different things.
Of course. So there's nothing what President Trump has said totally makes sense. He expects France and Germany and Russia and China and Mexico and Vietnam. He expects those countries, when they negotiate, to be putting their interests first. Likewise, as president, he will be putting our interests first.
And newsflash, everybody, those countries do put their interests first.
Of course they do. So, but over a number of years, we've been so magnanimous because I guess we've been, so wealthy and so blessed that we've started to sit there and say, gosh, we need to even put other people's interests first. Now, that's nice if you want to do that as a Christian, as the Bible says. But when you're running the government and the country, that's not your job.
Also, Trump was exploiting that graciousness because Obama. I got to get used to who our new president is. Obama was exploiting that graciousness because globally he wanted to take us down a peg and have us not be a superpower anymore. And you want to talk about anti-Semitism? How about the way Obama sold Israel up the river with that United Nations resolution just weeks before he stepped down? And Trump's defending Israel, and Trump's being called the anti-Semite. And then they want to talk about Hitler. I wouldn't be nasty enough to compare anybody to the kinds of things Hitler did late with the Final Solution. But early on, it was a socialist movement. Nazi means National Socialist Movement. They had a eugenics program. Margaret Sanger published an article by one of Hitler's eugenicists. Margaret Sanger herself believed in certain races being sterilized in eugenics. I mean, it just makes your head spin. Obama voted against the Illinois Infant Protection Act, which was a law against infanticide, not abortion, infanticide. So when we throw the word Nazi around, take it from somebody who's Jewish, whose own people were victimized by the real honest-to-goodness Nazis. You keep throwing around the word Nazi, you water it down. But if you wanted to look at some of the things that the real honest-to-goodness Nazis did early on, which political party really resembles them? Let's take an honest look.
Bob, it's called the big lie, but let's not just flip past here. To have national, alleged, straight-line journalists, supposed to be news reporters,
To say
those things about a presidential candidate and feel comfortable doing it shows you just how far journalism has fallen.
If they want to call themselves columnists, they can. I write a column. You write columns. We're doing a radio show. I'm not portraying myself as a journalist. I am a commentator. It's understood that I'm giving my opinion. I believe my opinion is right, but it's understood that I'm giving my opinion. When you're doing straight news, you're not supposed to offer any commentary. And when he gives his speech and they go, well, that sounds kind of dark. That sounds kind of dark, saying, let's make America great again. Obama got up there and said we needed to fundamentally transform America. I'd say that was a pretty pessimistic view of how America really was. They go, Trump has a pessimistic view, but he's going to save it. What the heck do you think Obama was saying 8 years ago?
Yeah.
If I sound kind of passionate about this, folks, it's only because I am.
It's okay to be passionate, Bob. Just not too passionate.
Yeah, I know. A little religion is good for the soul, but let's not become a fanatic.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So No. And if you take a look at the last 8 years, but it's been longer than the last 8 years, we've been on a trend in this country where we've had a number of things that have been transferring wealth out of this country. We have the trade deficits. I'm sorry, but that is a massive transfer of wealth, just as Donald Trump has said. And the fact that we get some, you know, goods and services that we toss in the trash 5 years later does not make up for the transfer of wealth. Not only the transfer of wealth, but the IP study group estimates $300 billion worth of intellectual property being stolen by China per year. So we've had this mass transfer out of this country. Then you get into the global, you know, green type climate agreements. And that also, by the way, when you analyze it, if we participate in those, it's also a massive transfer of wealth out of the country as well. So the thing is, Trump has basically said, listen, it's time to stop these types of programs. And, you know, that is upsetting, you know, what you would call the more, you know, President Obama, I'm sure, viewed himself as president of the world.
Well, any redistribution of wealth, foreign or domestic, Obama loved. But Republicans are saying it's a conservative principle to be for free trade. Now, Mike, I know you've been in the corner with Trump on this right from the beginning. As you know, I've gone kind of back and forth. But as I'm thinking about it, here's where I finally come out. And I'm not an economist. I have no problem with free trade. But it hasn't been free. America's been getting the shaft. That's how I would kind of summarize it.
It's actually, and it's a term that, you know, I know that libertarians are going to hate, but the term is fair trade. And the thing is that as a conservative, I recognize that the market in general is the best way to create wealth. In general is the best way to allocate resources in general. But it is not God. The market can be distorted. The market can be corrupted. Human beings can accumulate power to create market distortions so that you don't have an efficient market operating. And even if you do have an efficient market, the market is not the only thing. As a conservative, I recognize there's spiritual concerns. There's other things that as a public policymaker, I can look at and say, yeah, even if I'm not using the capital the most efficient here, the fact is I still care about that guy who's 55 years old being able to bring home a paycheck to his family that's been doing the job for 20 years. The value of that can exceed having maximum economic utilization at any given time.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And then once again, I keep saying this. I did breathe a sigh of relief when he finally got inaugurated. My next sigh of relief will be the Supreme Court justice. But so far, it looks like he's keeping his promises. A lot of people were afraid of what Trump promised to do. My only fear of Trump is that sometimes he flip-flop, and I was afraid he wouldn't keep all of his promises. So far, I gotta say, he's keeping them. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m.
This historic weekend of the inauguration, I'm here with my good friend and contributing writer for National Review, Mike Friedenberg.
Bob, yes. So just talking a little bit about the flip-flops, I saw things a little bit differently. What I saw on a macro level is almost no flip-flopping from Donald
Trump. You saw him thinking out loud one day and then the next day thinking about what he said.
The macro level, for example, he said he was pro-life. Now, we saw him thinking out loud on that issue because he was not experienced in dealing with the social issues.
Should I shut down Planned Parenthood? Should I not? But he still remained pro-life.
Or, for example, the whole hullabaloo over whether women should be penalized, individual women should be penalized, things like that. Now, those are debates that the pro-life community has had, and they've been settled. If he'd been experienced in the social, social conservatism area of things, he wouldn't have said that. But ultimately, I never saw him waver on his commitment to pro-life. Ever. I never saw him waver on his idea that he was going to. We had people getting so ridiculous. He said, well, gosh, I was going to do 17% reduction but on a tax code, but I'm going to do 19. Oh, that's a flip-flop. No, the bottom line is he said he was going to reduce taxes. He was going to reduce business taxes.
You're looking at the essence of
the essence, the macro level. He did not flip-flop on anything.
And when somebody speaks without a filter, sometimes they're going to say stupid things. But the alternative is a politician with 20 handlers saying, well, you can't say this or you'll offend this person. You can't say that. And it is refreshing to just, we all think out loud at times. It's refreshing to see somebody in the White House do it. I realize that it'll get him in trouble as often as he says something profound, but I still like that better than somebody who's really some kind of marionette on a string that doesn't really say anything after a lot of eloquence.
No, he does say what he thinks. That times does get him in trouble, but what we've had for many decades now, especially on the Republican side, is people so petrified and frightened of the media that they don't say anything.
And Mike, they're still doing it. We took back the House. They wouldn't stand up to Obama. We took back the Senate. They wouldn't stand up to Obama. We have the House and the Senate and the White House. And now the Democrats are in there. Democrats are practically extinct as a political species. You look at the state legislatures, the governors around the country in all the different states. You look at how much we've taken back in the National Congress, and what are we hearing? Oh, what this means is that the American people want bipartisanship and they want us to work together. No, it doesn't. The American people wanted the Democrats out of there. And what are we doing? We're still letting them hold up this confirmation process. Why? They have the nuclear option, thanks to Harry Reid, the gift that keeps on giving. Why are they putting up with this?
I think we're going to see some pretty rapid approval of the cabinet appointments at this point.
I hope
we
do soon, because when I'm seeing a senator grill the potential head of the CIA about global warming, it's time to stop. When I see an African American get up and say, you put Jeff Sessions on first before me, well, yeah, because he's the potential nominee. Well, that's like asking a black person to go to the back of the bus. Why do we keep listening to this drivel? People are tired of it.
The bottom line is just the reality of being in a country like we live in, a democracy, is there's a lot of people in office, both on the Republican side and on the Democrat side, that are there to be there to be there. They're there because they're there because they're there. They may, talk about high principles and things like that, but when push comes to shove, they want to get reelected.
We need to have term limits. Trump is going back to the way politics was supposed to be. People from a certain walk of life leave their trade for a while, serve for a while, and then go back home. But when they love being career politicians and they're motivated to keep themselves in power, then they're not really serving anybody.
I, for many, many, many years, actually at this point, many decades, I had a philosophical objection to term limits. However,
you're coming around, Mike.
I have to say
that. He's coming around,
no,
everybody.
Jess, and I know that there's good congressmen out there and people that have served well.
There's always a good guy that you'd like to see.
But even the best of them, you can see it start to affect how they view things
after
a certain amount of time.
Term limits for the Supreme Court too, lifetime appointments. I understand the logic behind it. They're afraid that if they make decisions based on getting reelected, but we have people that can keep getting reelected anyway, and they're still making decisions to keep themselves in power. Let's just not give anybody that much power for that long.
I have not thought that through, speak on the term limits for Supreme Court justices.
Well, let me help you, Mike. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I understand.
Lifetime appointment. Think that one through.
But Clarence Thomas, Antonin Scalia.
Thomas Scalia. Well, that's different. I understand. You and I are going to have ones that we want to see have lifetime appointments. The liberals are going to have the ones they want to see. We shouldn't give it to anybody. I just don't think the court should have that much power.
What I do want to see is the idea that the U.S. Supreme Court would be absolutely positively, with no recourse, the final arbiter on everything, was not the way the Constitution meant it to be. There was supposed to be some mechanisms to be able to to challenge the U.S. Supreme Court as needed. Because if you don't have that, then it's not this. It's not an equal balance.
We have three separate branches of government so that no one branch can run it. And yet we can have the president of the United States sign a bill that came to him from Congress and the House. Two out of the three branches of government, one judge decides based on which side of the bed he got out of that morning that he doesn't like it, and that becomes our national law.
Exactly.
Because it's a 5-4 vote. It's insane.
And also what it's allowed to happen is, especially on the left, because when they've had the domination on the court, is they've been able to basically say, oh gosh, it was made by this decision by the Supreme Court. It's out of my hands. So it basically takes away accountability for making some awful decisions by people that, you, as you point out, are there for lifetime terms. So,
and that rules us by an oligarchy, not a republic. Not a democracy.
And the Supreme Court was never meant to make law. They were meant to interpret law.
Even the word interpret isn't even there in the Constitution.
But it was meant to be. It was meant to apply the law by original intent.
If a new law was coming up through the states or somebody was bringing a case, they could interpret that law by comparing it to what the Constitution said. But people think they have some special interpretive powers to give a secret meaning of what the Constitution means. And that kind of interpretation they were never given.
That's why we're supposed to go back to original intent.
Exactly.
We're supposed to read what the founders read and wrote and said, and then you interpret in that light. If you don't interpret in that light, then basically what you're doing is you're making things up and you're using your own opinions to make the law.
Yeah, and what we hear today, original intent, what are you, some fanatic from the past? I think the Constitution is a living, breathing document. It's just, and people are reacting to the way words sound. It's the old saying, symbolism over substance.
If you are not using original intent, you are making law.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
And the people that are supposed to make law is the legislature or certain ballot measures. We are supposed to be a combination democracy and republic mostly, with elements of democracy. It's only by a thin thread that we've been holding on to both. I think we have a reprieve. I'm still a little wary of how Trump loves making deals. I think he believes he can sit down with the Israelis and Palestinians and make the deal of the century. He's going to be in for a big awakening.
Well, Jared's going to get peace
and
for
I
us.
I don't want to see, well, you know, I brought in a moderate Supreme Court justice that the Republicans and Democrats can both. Moderates don't exist anymore. It's just that some people are a little less liberal than others. There's no such thing as a moderate anymore. You're a conservative or you're a liberal. I know I have some friends out there that call themselves moderate. It only means that they read one book by Karl Marx instead of 10. We'll be right back. Buying a home? Selling a home? It goes without saying that you need somebody experienced and skilled, but you also need a realtor you can trust, a man who will look out for your interests as if they were his own. This is Bob Siegel, here to steer you the right direction with just two words, Fred Valduti. Fred works with Realty Executives All Area, a company that has sold thousands of homes locally since 1994. Putting your home up for sale or selling a home can be stressful, filled with decisions you never anticipated. So put your mind at ease and call Fred Valduti. He sold my home for me at top price. Every step along the way, I benefited from his wisdom and a very generous usage of his time. By the way, Fred Valduti received the Executive of the Year Award for 2014. What? You say that was a couple of years ago? Listen, wise guy, do you want to mark the calendar or do you want somebody to sell your home for you? Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Valduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfelduty.com.
Christmas may be over, but reader enthusiasm for the dangerous Christmas ornament doesn't end. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Anytime I read a book where I want to find out what happens in the next chapter all the way to the last page of the book is a great book. This is the experience you and your children will have reading The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. I read the whole thing in a short time despite a busy schedule. The interesting plot lines has the flavor of realism because the author is writing from his own childhood experiences and ours as well. You will relate to the authentic family dynamics and the playground trials and triumphs described in the book. The book will also make you laugh as some of the characters have a great sense of humor, delivering good-natured jokes mixed with a dose of sarcasm. Most importantly, the book throughout has a moral dimension to it that takes it to a deeper level, making it a preferred selection to read to your kids. Enjoy The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available in bookstores and libraries.
Playing some sweet music to atone for having played Streisand earlier. Mike, we're having our last segment. I want to give you a chance to share some ideas you haven't had a chance to get out yet.
Yeah, so I think that as conservatives, we have to be pretty pleased with what we've seen since the election was concluded and Trump has taken office. I mean, really pleased. And in general, I think that even a lot of never Trumpers are going, wow, maybe he's not as bad as he.
But they're saying it secretly and not openly. People don't want to be admit if they.
Well, maybe they don't. The thing is that
they're the ones. Some of them may have been the ones that secretly voted for him. And that's what threw the pollsters.
Ultimately, my wife has a lot of friends, that are very socially conservative, not necessarily big economic conservatives, but that last debate when Trump came out very solidly against the partial birth abortion, she knows so many people that just said boom. That decided for him. That took him over the edge to vote for Donald Trump.
I would think that anyone that would be for partial birth abortion, that would just send chills.
Yes. And so we have what looks to be a very good cabinet. But the thing is that I have to let myself, caution myself, that I'm not going to get everything I want. And I'll give you an example.
And we can't be saying that we support Trump no matter what he does, because we're not going to agree with everything he does.
And
we need to hold him to the fire when we don't agree.
Like one of my hot button issue is defense reform, procurement reform. Okay. And I've been writing a lot about it.
You've written some articles that have gotten some really good notoriety.
Yeah,
Go to National Review, everybody, and read some of Mike's articles.
So, and in particular, I am 100% certain that the F-35 program is a disaster for our country. It will hurt us militarily for decades to come. Yet, Donald, and I had some hope with Donald Trump because he expressed some reservations about it. But what I see happening now is he's in the process of negotiating a better price for it.
See, he likes to negotiate a little too much.
And the thing is that no matter what price we get for the F-35, it's a bad plane.
So Trump's going to think about the good price. You're going to think about
the quality of the plane. And he doesn't have the depth of knowledge to understand why.
He just knows he got a good deal.
And he has really some very honorable, good people that are his advisors. General Mattis, General Kelly. But the thing about the problem
is he's not listening to them.
He is listening to them. Here's the problem that we have right now is that these guys, as old as there's now been 30, 40 years of a defense procurement system that is heavily dominated by the vendors, the defense contractors. So these guys have grown up in that system from the time they were lieutenants to the time they retired as 3 and 4 star generals. They were surrounded by a very inefficient, really, I would have to say, corrupt system. But they live their lives in it. Their careers were spent into it. So they've been there for so long, they can't see it anymore. So their ability to be objective about advising Donald Trump on defense procurement issues is very limited because they just grew up in that system. It's like if you're like a frog in the water. You know, you start to boil it. The frog doesn't even know it's boiling to death.
The frog's
and that's kind of what happened. Or you like you're in a, if you first enter a room and something smells really bad,
after
but
a while,
2 hours later, you don't
get
know.
Used to it.
And I would submit that these honorable, bright people that really care about their country, as much as they know and how smart as they are, they do not have an objective view about the kind of reforms that we need to make in defense procurement. They don't. They just can't see it. And their whole careers were based upon the idea that if you said something wrong about a major defense program, your chance of an advancement going to the next rank were destroyed. That's the system they're in. And we have a system now where 80% of generals and admirals, when they leave the military, 80% go right into six-figure defense contractor positions with private sector companies. That's created a de facto integration of procurement and the defense contractors. There's no accountability, and the system shows it. So even though we've spent as much time, as much money as during the Reagan buildup, the massive Reagan buildup, we've actually seen during that period of time we've been spending that much money, we've been seeing our military shrink because we're so grossly inefficient and we have wasted our money. Trillions of dollars have been wasted. Trillions.
Yeah, and this, of course, is something that I know you feel very passionate about. Tell people how they can. You write for National Review Online. You've written several good articles for them. Some of them have gotten just thousands of hits. There's certain people that are pretty famous now that your articles have come to their attention.
Well, I have gotten some attention, and that's the reason.
Was it George Will? George Will.
Yeah, I did get some good publicity.
I was thinking
George
the two. One of the guys that didn't like Trump. One was Crystal. The other one was Will. I knew it was one of those two guys. But they like you, Mike. So.
Yeah, and I try to delve into the details, not glowing generalities, but just to document why the process is not working and the faults and the problems with it. And so I write for National Review because even though it's a conservative publication, a lot of establishment Republicans read it. A lot of, you know, staff members that work for the, you know, the GOP congressmen read it. So I'm hoping to get them to think that, hey, just because you're a Republican and you believe in, you know, a strong defense doesn't mean that you can't also be critical of the system if it's not producing the results it should be producing. And it's
exactly. not. We can agree on what our goal is and disagree on the best route to get there.
Exactly. And we really, our procurement system is no longer capable of producing the weapons and the systems in the numbers that we can afford to operate and maintain. It can no longer do that. We're actually living on borrowed time. We're now the fighters that can actually provide us the best value right now. We're designed in the 70s and the 80s. We have not designed a good fighter since the 1970s or early 80s. We have not actually built a good ship, designed a good ship since the 80s. So actually, when we see the collapse of the Soviet Union actually hurt our procurement system because the urgency disappeared. Basically, we were so powerful and so big that really, if we didn't design a good ship, we'd still be the most powerful. If we wasted billions of dollars on a program and 10 years later, it didn't produce anything, we'd still be the biggest guy on the block.
Well, you know, it's possible now that you're writing for National Review that it'll come to the attention of Trump. He follows a lot of news outlets. He does seem like the kind of person that if he understood the truth, he might do something about
it. I think so,
but he's very eager to chomp at the bit and make that art of the deal.
No, he is, but he, like most Republicans, rightfully, has tremendous respect for the military and the advisors he have around him. I mean, listen, you're talking about 3- and 4-star generals that have spent their life protecting this country. People that have actually gone in harm's way to protect this country, those are advising him. So when those people say, hey, the F-35, I think we need it, he's going to listen to them. I hate to say it, but that's what I'm concerned about.
So maybe we need to somehow find a way to get them to listen.
Well, we need to get them to listen. And what I think is what we need is I think we need an independent panel of people that have not spent their careers in the military, that have not spent their careers working for defense contractors, but, you know, that have some engineering acumen, that have some technical background, that have some business background to review these defense programs and provide a truly objective evaluation of what they're doing.
Well, Mike, congratulations. You've been telling me about these ideas for years. I'm glad you've got a vehicle such as National Review to get out there. And congratulations again on calling the polls wrong for predicting Hillary's win. By the way, I'm going to follow your lead, and I think these polls now that are talking about what a horrible approval rating he has, aren't they from some of those same pollsters? Should we really pay attention to them?
Same pollsters, but this time, unlike the vote, which actually does show the reality of what things are like, they don't ever have to be held accountable.
Exactly.
Because they keep on saying it forever, Because remember, Trump was down 20 points favorability rating when he won on Election Day.
Yeah.
Just to show you how ridiculous it is.
Which proves it had to be hacked, because God forbid that our polls should have been wrong. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.